when it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Breaking and entering, drunk and disorderly, law and order. A former prosecutor and a defense lawyer, not your typical pairing. And the result? Conversations about crime and punishment that are guaranteed to get you thinking.
Welcome to Justice Matters with Joe Crowley and Lizzie Green, a brand new weekly podcast. Our episodes are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Check out our Instagram for clips at Justice Matters Pod. Enjoy the episode. This episode contains descriptions of violence, neglect of children, and family violence. Listener discretion is advised. Hello, Lizzie. How are you?
Good, Joe. How are you?
I'm well. Nice to see you.
Good to be here.
All right. We have another difficult topic again to talk about this week.
We do. We've talked in other episodes about specifically violence against women, murder of, you know, various people.
Intimate partner homicide.
Mm-hmm. Dangerous driving causing death. You know, we've touched on pretty horrible things, but today's episode is going to be a tough one. But I think it's one that needs to be talked about a little bit, and it's about the killing of children specifically, and in the context of parents, carers, guardians being the ones who commit the killing. It is upsetting to research, to read about, to talk about, and you know, I feel emotional about it. I'm sure, you know, listening to it will be tough. But this is something that has been the focus of some attention by the government, by the media,
in recent years. Am I right in saying, my recollection is certainly, it's often in the media, and the complaints are that parents who are involved in killing their children aren't getting the kind of sentences that certainly the newspaper and perhaps society thinks that they should.
Absolutely.
And then you said it was involved, the government looked at it recently. That's in Queensland here.
Yes. So a lot of what we'll talk about today is Queensland focused in terms of the law itself. But unfortunately, the issue of child homicide is not just a national but a global consideration, particularly in the context of abuse and neglect, you know, and that leading to death. And I think we had a pretty shocking report in the media from New South Wales last year about...
So the cases you're looking at are not just from Queensland, and I think you've got an international case.
I do. Yep. But the law that I'm going to talk about is specific to Queensland. So I should make that disclaimer at the start.
Right, but it's the same sort of law that exists. Yeah, principles exist.
That's right.
Yes. Okay. All right. What's our first case?
Okay. So I just want to give you a little bit of background.
Yeah.
So generally here in Queensland, also in Australia, generally in order to be convicted of murder, the prosecution have to be able to show that the offender had an intention to cause death, or in some jurisdictions, an intention to cause what we refer to as grievous bodily harm, so really serious injury. Mm. Some states require an intent to kill for a murder charge.
Only, so.
Yeah, WA.
Only an intent to kill.
Yep.
Interesting, okay.
And then if you are found guilty, it is mandatory life in prison.
Mm.
If you are responsible for the death of someone, but you haven't acted with a specific intent to cause that death or to cause really serious harm, most jurisdictions then have the lesser offence of manslaughter.
Yeah, so you're causally connected to the death, something that you do causes the death, but you don't have that intention to kill them or do serious injury.
So your culpability is different.
Yeah.
And so you're guilty of the killing, but you're only subject to a maximum of life imprisonment, and the judge decides what the appropriate punishment is.
So the standard manslaughter case is a fight outside a pub where somebody falls over, bangs their head on the gutter and dies or something.
Yep.
That's your sort of typical manslaughter.
Yeah, there are two types of manslaughter. One is manslaughter on the basis of intentional violence of some kind.
Yep.
That was not intended to cause death or GBH.
So you're just in a fight with someone, yep.
And then the other type of manslaughter is manslaughter on the basis of what we call criminal negligence, that you have acted or failed to act in a way that you were required to do, and you've been so negligent that we class it as criminal negligence and you're responsible for the consequence.
Yeah.
And so when that consequence is death, you are guilty of manslaughter, even though legally you may not be able to prove an unlawful killing.
Yeah. Those ones are less common, aren't they? The criminal negligence effect manslaughters.
Except when it comes to child homicide.
Yes. So those are the most common. All right. So did you want to set up the child neglect homicides?
I do. So the case that I wanted to start with relates to a little 22-month-old called Mason Jet Lee.
Mm.
And this is now quite an old case.
Mm.
2016, he was killed. This is a lot to take on, but I'll give you the facts of this case.
Yep.
So he was the fifth child of Anne Marie Lee. She was in a relationship with a guy called William O'Sullivan at the time that little Mason died. These two didn't live together, but they lived near each other. It was not a peaceful relationship. Mm. It was a violent relationship.
Yep.
At about 12:50 a.m. back in June 2016, police officers and paramedics attended at William O'Sullivan's address. And when they arrived, he ran out into the yard and he was holding this little 22-month-old boy in his arms. He passed Mason over the fence to the paramedics on the other side. And it was obvious to the paramedics immediately that Mason was dead and that he had been dead for some time.
Okay.
He was wearing a dirty white singlet and nothing else. The police officers who attended, the paramedics who attended, immediately observed bruises on his face, his arms, his legs and body, as well as some severe injuries to his anus, which we'll talk about in a minute.
Mm.
But William O'Sullivan told the police that he had fed Mason when he got home that night. He said that Mason vomited after that and he cleaned him up. He said that at that point, one of his friends came over and they were, you know, hanging out together. Later on, he said he removed Mason's nappy and gave him a bottle. And then he said while he was sitting in the kitchen with his friend, he heard a coughing noise. He saw that Mason's lips were clamped on the bottle and his lips were blue. He said he phoned 000, commenced CPR, at which time Mason had begun to blow up like a balloon. He said he forced his fingers into Mason's anus in an attempt to release the air in his stomach, thereby causing those visible injuries.
Mm.
So that was his first version of events.
Yep.
He went on to give different versions of events as to what had happened that night. He was obviously dead. He was taken by the paramedics. There was a lot that happened afterwards. There was a criminal trial or criminal charges. There was also a coroner's inquest.
Yeah.
And I'm going to come back to the criminal trial, but I wanted to set the scene in terms of what the coroner found.
So does the coroner's inquest occur after the criminal trial?
I think it was before. Mm-hmm. And not that there was, I think, ever any real doubt as to the fact that the version of events given by O'Sullivan was not true. Mm. So there was suspicion about Mason's death immediately.
Yeah.
But the coroner's report detailed what the coroner thought had happened, but also all of the medical evidence relating to little Mason. And then both the mother and William O'Sullivan were charged in relation to Mason's death. So we'll come to that.
Mm-hmm.
But so this is hard to hear because this is everything that this poor little baby boy had suffered.
Yes.
So there was a full autopsy 3 days after he died, and it revealed firstly that he was in the 50th percentile for his age. He had no underlying medical conditions which would have contributed to his death. Apart from all of the injuries catalogued, he was internally a healthy, normal, almost two-year-old. It revealed that he had been severely mistreated for some time before his death. There was toxicology results that showed the presence of methamphetamine and amphetamines in his system.
Okay.
The list of injuries catalogued at the time of his death were as follows. There was a rash on his face and around his eyes, weeping lesion under his eye, 3 mouth ulcers, an ulcer in his ear, 5 anal fissures, so tears, the most severe being 24 millimetres long and 4 millimetres deep, a partially prolapsed rectum, a total of 46 separate bruises to his body, an old fracture of his left leg, 6 internal hemorrhages on his scalp, severe injuries to his abdominal and pelvic cavity, and a fracture of the coccyx, which had occurred more than several days prior to his death.
Yeah.
So we just think about the size of a 22-month-old, how it's even possible for that amount of injuries to have been inflicted. It boggles my mind. So the summary, he had suffered displacement of his large bowel and rectum, displaced fracture of his coccyx, a fracture of his tibia, 46 bruises, ulcers, scalp hemorrhages consistent with head trauma and hair pulling, and several bowel injuries which led to infection of the peritoneum and sepsis. So the finding was that the abdominal injuries were caused by blunt force trauma, which could have been in the form of squeezing or impact, which they compared to the types of injuries you would see in a high velocity motor vehicle collision or by a fall onto a focal point.
Yeah.
But both of those injuries to the abdomen could have been caused by a single blow, or they could have been two separate incidents. They felt the coccyx fracture was a separate blunt force trauma, such as a punch or a kick, that was inflicted several days prior to his death. The anal fissures were not recent, but the forensic pathologist couldn't say for sure how they had been inflicted.
Yeah.
And the bruises were caused by multiple blunt force trauma.
Mm.
So from the time he received those abdominal injuries until he died, he would have been in severe pain. Feeling extremely unwell, vomiting and febrile, and experiencing altered levels of consciousness. And that was what they could ascertain from the autopsy. So let's just take that in for a minute. It is beyond horrific to think about the degree of abuse that this little tiny body suffered. His last days and probably much of his short little life would have been filled with pain, confusion, fear. What happened? Okay, this is where we want to see justice. Both Amber Lee and William O'Sullivan were charged with one count of manslaughter in relation to Mason, plus one count of cruelty to a child under the age of 16 because they failed to provide him with adequate medical treatment, and which they ought to have known that they should have given. The manslaughter charge was also considered a domestic violence charge as well. So that was a circumstance of aggravation that was added. They both pleaded guilty to that charge. There was no trial. O'Sullivan's criminal history was pretty lengthy.
Yep.
He had prior offences because violence. Of drug addiction. He had a disposition for violence and cruelty. But it was submitted to the court that his plea of guilt was timely and it was consistent with remorse.
Okay.
He was imprisoned on remand and he did attempt suicide at that time. He was admitted to a mental health ward. He was severely assaulted in prison, resulting in bleeding on the brain, broken fingers, a fracture to the skull, a fractured cheekbone, amputation of part of a finger. So he was not popular in prison.
In prison, yeah.
He was originally sentenced to imprisonment for 9 years for the manslaughter charge on Mason.
Yeah.
That a parole, was appealed. A parole eligibility date at 6 years. And it was appealed. And so he was resentenced to 12 years imprisonment, which
and parole seems after.
No declaration for parole, just at the halfway point.
Oh, so he's got a better parole than after his...
Oh. Oh, I didn't see any reference to that.
I wonder if it's that after 10 years you've got to serve 80%
SVO,
or something. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, okay, so he serves 80%.
Serious violent offender. Okay. Yes, that was it.
All right.
So I think that's, you know, 12 years... was high. I mean, you know, fair, high. I think 12 years is good.
When you say good, just explain what you mean by good.
I should say just.
Yes.
Okay. I think about what he must have done to Mason.
Yes.
And I think that a period of imprisonment over 10 years is necessary.
Yes.
I would call it murder.
Yes.
Even though the courts did not, the prosecution did not, they called it manslaughter. I think even if it wasn't an intent with one blow to kill, the persistent treatment of him showed an intention.
Anyway. Is it so? But isn't this exactly your issue? This is your point.
Yeah.
So they don't charge with murder.
For manslaughter, 12 years is high.
Yes.
Like when we think about punishments you can get for manslaughter, it can be as little as 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
So I'll give you a side note, an example that comes to mind. You might remember the Honeymoon Killer. He was an American who came over with his wife and they went scuba diving in North Queensland, Gabe Watson. And he was an experienced diver. His wife had not dived before and she got into trouble. And there was some evidence he tried to help her, but then he chose to leave her to die and he saved himself.
Yes.
You know, he just went up to the surface. And he got charged with manslaughter on the basis of negligence, that he should have helped her and he didn't.
Yes.
He served 18 months for that.
Yeah.
You know, so that's an example of how low the penalty can be.
Yeah.
So I think in terms of a manslaughter charge, 12 years, is definitely at the higher end of what would be usually imposed.
So you started to talk about intention. I think I interrupted you, but that's really the crucial point, isn't it? You know, is there an intention to kill or do serious harm? And am I right in saying it's problematic in these kind of child neglect cases? Because if it is neglect in that you just failed to provide the child with what they need, you know, that's can be, you know, it might be just because you are a criminally negligently hopeless parent, but it doesn't necessarily prove this intention to kill. I mean, the intentional violence that's obviously inflicted on Mason Jet Li, that
is different.
Is different, but again, is the issue, tell me if I'm wrong, the issue is that none of the injuries of themselves were fatal injuries in terms of the...
Well, it's partly that, but also partly that in terms of proving intent at law, you have to prove what's called direct intent, meaning the Crown have to establish that when you did whatever you did, you were acting with the purpose or the design of causing death or grievous bodily harm. So you had to have that in your mind.
Yeah. And as opposed to what's the opposite? What's the flip side to direct intent? I don't encourage people to read The Queen Against Peters.
But it could be like...
recklessness.
Foreseeability or recklessness that you do something and you should know, you should appreciate that there is the risk of death or GBH.
Yeah.
So it's a really high bar for intent at law.
Yes.
And so this charge of manslaughter as an alternative is obviously much easier to prove.
Yes.
And often even when someone has been charged with murder, a plea of guilt to manslaughter will be accepted by the prosecution for a variety of reasons.
Yes.
But it means that life imprisonment is off the table.
Yes.
You know, that culpability for that degree of malice is gone.
Yeah.
So 12 years was a high sentence for a manslaughter charge.
Yes.
In relation to Lee, the mother, she also was charged with manslaughter on the basis of negligence.
Yes.
That she should have acted to protect him.
Failed to provide medical assistance.
Yeah. I mean, she said he wouldn't let her see him.
Right.
That William O'Sullivan was keeping him at the house in some kind of power move over her.
Right.
But turns out she was in contact with various support services.
Yeah.
Even 2 days before Mason died, and she never mentioned that he was at risk, or she said William was a good person to look after him.
Okay.
The court considered a number of factors when determining what penalty she should get. They said that a mother's neglect of her child, which results in that child's death, is an appalling offence. However, it's not to be compared with an unlawful killing constituted by a deliberate violent act. In cases of neglect, the offender's personal circumstances become very relevant in determining a just sentence. Those circumstances might explain why a mother would act in a way that is so inconsistent with normal expectations.
Yes.
And look, Amber Lee had had a horrible life. She was absolutely a victim herself of violence, but there were choices she made that are not explicable, that did not demonstrate any care for her child.
Yeah.
And that's the bottom line.
Yeah. So what did she get? What was her
She was sentenced to 9 years imprisonment with a parole eligibility date that happened to be 5 months later, because she had already served two and a half years.
Okay.
So effectively she was asked to serve 3 years in prison for Mason's death.
Okay. And what do you think of that sentence?
I think that is not okay.
Mm-hmm.
She knew that he was in danger. She knew that he was injured and unwell. She had the means to get help, to alert people to the situation, and these were choices she made not to do that. I think that, and I've said this before, maybe not to you, but I remember going to get a puppy and a kitten at a rescue shelter, and we were there for almost an entire day.
Oh, wow.
Filling out paperwork and having checks done to make sure we had a suitable home. And I think people can just have children and then treat them like this. And 3 years in custody, I think, is not reflective.
No. Was that appealed?
Yes, but it was not disturbed on appeal.
Okay. And what was the, was there any reporting about? What was the sort of the public feeling, if you can judge that by newspapers?
The public outrage at this was substantial. There was definitely a feeling of...
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Unfairness.
Yes.
And dissatisfaction with the sentencing. More so, I think, about Lee than O'Sullivan, although the 9 years initially was problematic.
Yeah. But even the 12 years, was that felt to be...
I didn't see media reports after.
After that, yeah. Okay, yep.
The appeal court said about her liability that because she had shown remorse, because she was the victim herself and her culpability was different, the original trial judge had not been incorrect in setting 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of reference to similar cases.
Yes.
So we have this huge system where we look at past cases to give us or give the courts guidance as to what is an appropriate sentence. And the reference, like you read through how many cases there are of children being killed at the hands of their parents and getting anywhere between 7 to 10 years for that.
Yeah.
And in fact, I looked at statistics and the average penalty for child homicide, 6.8 years.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
These are children.
Yeah.
So many problems.
Well, I know that there was a lot of outrage in Queensland 18 months, 2 years ago, was it? And there was, and that I think is how it came before the government again to sort of do something about the sentences in these cases.
So the Queensland Sentencing Advisory Council did an inquiry into child homicide and community perceptions of sentencing, and there was just widespread dissatisfaction. And so the government had to take note of that, and recommendations were made.
Yeah.
And so there was law reform, and I, for a moment, was excited at the progress we were making. And so the reform was based on the recommendations that a new murder charge should be introduced in Queensland, so that someone who maybe did not have that specific intent to cause death or grievous bodily harm could still be charged with murder if it was able to be proved they acted with what we call reckless indifference to life.
Yeah.
Meaning the probable consequence would have been what it was, and they did or didn't do the act regardless.
Yeah, so they don't intend directly, they don't think, oh, I'm going to make sure this child dies. They just engage in a conduct which they ought to know will end in the child dying.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so for a really long time, there has been reckless indifference murder in other jurisdictions. New South Wales has had it for years.
Okay.
The difference being, New South Wales and other jurisdictions do not have mandatory life in prison. So the penalties for child homicide, even when it's called murder in those different jurisdictions, is still quite low.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Let me give you some statistics why this is such a big concern.
Yep.
So this is research from Australia, like this is Australia-wide. Unfortunately, Australia records a relatively high incidence of child homicide as compared to other jurisdictions, other nations. About 10% of homicides in Australia are child victims.
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
The majority of child homicides are committed within the child's home, and the rate of homicides for infants under the age of one is 8 times as high as those for children aged 1 to 14.
Wow.
So there's evidence that the older a child gets,
yeah,
the less likely they are to be killed in the home.
Yeah.
Obviously they can
Well, I suppose
react,
as soon as they,
respond, leave, all of those things.
Well, and as soon as they start attending school, then the school authorities can...
Oh, we'll talk about that.
Okay.
So we have had recognition that more needs to be done nationally about this. And since 2010 in Queensland, there have been little things chipping away at punishment and dealing with this. So our legislation that talks about sentencing, the Penalties and Sentences Act, has added considerations that if it is an offence of violence against a child, imprisonment is not a last resort. Consider imprisonment as a starting point. If it is a child under the age of 12, consider that an aggravating factor when sentencing. So there have been moves to become harsher with punishment. But I still think the problem lies with the classification of the offence as manslaughter and then the typical sentence being less than 10 years.
Have we had a case? We haven't had a reckless and indifference murder case, have we?
We have not. We have not.
We haven't tested that.
And I got so excited because I teach criminal law.
Yes.
And obviously I keep up to date. Yes, I update my lectures every semester. Yes. And so I saw in May 2019 the introduction of our reckless indifference murder charge. Yep. I was like, amazing. Yep. This is going to be the answer to the problem.
Yeah.
And in December 2019, a mere, you know, 6 months later, we had our first offender charged
okay.
under the new provision
yep.
with murder on the basis of reckless indifference.
Yes.
So
do you have the facts of that case?
I do.
All right.
I do. And I think this made, you know, headlines as well nationally. So okay. again, unpleasant to listen to. Mm. But this was a woman called Kerry Ann Conley.
Mm.
And she was charged with murder in relation to her 1 and 2 year old daughters. And so this offence occurred November 2019, Queensland, right on the edge of summer.
Yeah.
And Conley had been at a friend's house the night before.
Probably should say for those who aren't familiar with Queensland weather, what average temperatures in summer in Queensland?
Oh, like
32 degrees Celsius.
Between 30 and 35.
Yeah.
Celsius. Nice and warm.
Very warm.
Yes.
Yes.
So she'd taken her daughters with her to the friend's house.
Yeah.
She had had drugs, alcohol. She got home at about 4 a.m. She pulled the car into the front yard and just parked it in the front yard, not undercover, not in a carport. And she went inside.
Yeah.
But she locked up the car and left the girls in the car. They were asleep.
Yeah.
At about 1:20 p.m., she went out to the car. She couldn't rouse the girls.
Yes.
She says she took them into the bathroom to splash water on their faces to see if she could revive them, but she couldn't. She then called her ex-partner in a panic saying, I can't wake them. He said, call the ambulance, and she did.
Yeah.
And at 1:40, the ambulance got there and both the little girls were obviously dead.
Yeah. Okay, so parked in the front yard. Windows up, presumably.
Windows up, doors locked.
And doors
strapped into their seats.
Strapped in their seats. And then when the sun comes up, it's in the indirect sun. And for anybody who's lived in Queensland or any hot climates, cars obviously get incredibly hot inside.
Yes. Would you like to know what they estimated the temperature to be?
Not really, but tell me anyway.
So that day it was about 33 degrees outside.
Yep.
The expert evidence was that the temperature in that car by mid-morning to lunchtime would have been at least 60 degrees.
60 degrees Celsius, yeah.
So what happened here? She said she got home at 4 a.m. She didn't want to wake the girls because that would upset their routine and that she must have passed out when she got inside and when she woke up and went out.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
Yeah.
However, not true.
Right.
Because there was evidence that she was on her phone until 5:55 a.m.
Okay.
So she was awake for at least almost 2 hours.
Yeah.
At 6 a.m., the sun was up.
Yeah.
6 a.m. is a normal time for a 1 and a 2 year old to get up.
Yeah.
So she could very well have gone and taken her children out of the car at that time.
Yeah.
Come inside, started the day. She needed to sleep.
Mm.
So she slept for 5 hours.
Yeah.
No, she slept for more than that. And so when she got up at 1, that is the first time she decided to go and check on the girls, 9 hours after she had brought them home.
Mm.
So she also didn't immediately call for help.
Yeah.
So she did take them into the bathroom.
Yeah.
Then she decided to get rid of her drug paraphernalia and drug residue that she had in the house. She put that in the bin and then she called her ex-partner and the ambulance.
Yeah.
She was charged with murder on the basis of reckless indifference. Her treatment of her 2 baby girls on that day was deemed to demonstrate a total disregard for their lives and safety, and their deaths were a probable consequence of her actions.
Yeah.
And that was what the threshold was for that charge. They characterized her first grossly negligent act to be leaving them in the car. It was a vulnerable place. They were uncared for, unheard, unobserved, and it was dark.
Yeah.
The second thing was failing to check on them at 6 a.m.
Yes.
So
As she's going to sleep.
As she hopped off her phone before she went to sleep.
And you said the sun's up at 6 a.m. I mean, in summer, the sun's up earlier than 6
a.m. Way earlier.
It's like 5 o'clock sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. So It's not like they would have had their sleep disrupted necessarily.
No.
And obviously the overarching conduct, which created the liability, was leaving them for the 9 hours unattended. She didn't think about them, didn't care for them or their welfare.
Mm.
She's the reason they died.
Mm.
Now, it did turn out that she was a frequent and heavy user of meth, amphetamine. While she was on remand, she told an undercover police officer that she smoked meth daily.
Okay.
But her children always came first and the drugs did not affect her relationship with them.
Okay.
The judge, when he heard that, said that was patently a lie, which I liked to read. She was also known...
Oh, sorry, I might just, before you go on, unpack that for people who aren't familiar with police investigative procedures. Oh. I mean, it's not uncommon when people are on remand, i.e. they've been arrested and they're in jail and they haven't been charged yet, or they have been charged and they're awaiting trial, that police will put an undercover police officer who is pretending to be a prisoner in with them, befriend them, talk to them, and that's a pretty common investigative technique.
Yes, yes. She was also known to family services.
Okay.
So she had a history of leaving her babies in the car unattended for lengthy periods, usually after getting home in the early hours of the morning from partying with friends or socializing with friends, and she would go inside and sleep. Now, often she would have a friend or relative in the house who would bring the girls in.
Yeah, okay.
And that's why this hadn't happened before.
Yeah.
But it was definitely not a one-off isolated incident.
Yeah.
She knew the risks and she took them anyway. So,
do you know how old she was?
Yeah, she was 27 at the time, 30 when it came to court.
Yeah.
When the court was told about what had actually happened to the little girls on that day, this is how it was described in the court documents. When their dead bodies were discovered, their skin was badly blistered. They had suffered dehydration. One can only hope that these little girls slowly succumbed to the growing heat of the day much earlier that morning and faded into a deep sleep from which they never returned. The alternative of them being awake, distressed, and trapped in their seats is too much to bear thinking about for too long. When the paramedics arrived at 1:40 and touched them, their skin peeled away at the touch and was still hot to touch. They literally baked in that car. Just horrific.
Yeah.
Horrific.
Yeah.
And so I followed all of this from 2019 through 2020. There was a committal hearing on the charge of reckless indifference. Fast forward to 2023.
Yes.
She pleaded guilty to 2 counts of manslaughter.
Yes.
On the basis of criminal negligence.
Yes.
She received a sentence of 9 years imprisonment, just the same as Amber Lee did in 2016 before the reforms came in.
Yes.
And so I think, how long?
Yeah, how long did she actually spend in jail?
So she had also served almost 3 years in pre-sentence custody, so she'll be eligible for parole at the end of next year, 2024.
Yeah. So I assume what happened, and you're about to tell us no doubt, is that there was a plea deal done.
Yeah, she offered to plead guilty.
To the lesser charge of manslaughter.
Of manslaughter.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I honestly, maybe it makes me a crim nerd, but I was avidly watching for news.
That does make you a crim nerd,
The committal hearing. I was really curious to see how this new charge would play out in court.
Yes.
And what the definition of reckless indifference would actually be and how they would prove that.
Yep.
She had been, you know, and then if she was convicted, she would get life in prison, which to me, when I read about those poor little babies, I thought, fair.
That's appropriate. Okay.
Fair.
All right. Well, I don't know if you're going to complain about this, but I am because at the so far we haven't disagreed on anything. I think we're exactly on the same page.
Yeah.
Well, I don't. Are we talking about plea deals? Because that can often be a point of contention, and particularly I found people in the public don't always understand them and the utility of them. How sensible they can be.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, so I mean, I wasn't obviously a lawyer involved in the case, so I don't know exactly what went on. I'm going to take some educated guesses that the lawyers representing the mother, having looked at all of the material, decided that they wouldn't win a trial. Approached the prosecutors and said, we'll plead guilty to a lesser charge. And so then the prosecutors are in the position they can run a trial panel a jury, spend public money trying to prove a reckless indifference murder charge with the possibility that they would fail. It sounds unlikely, but, I mean, there's always a possibility when you put something in front of a jury.
Oh, yes. Always.
Always a possibility. So, and so it's sort of bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. They had a definite conviction, but for a lesser charge, which they could take, which would, I mean, saves the public purse a fair swag of money because running trials are expensive, saves time, and, you know, allows the matter to be dealt with quickly so that the overworked criminal justice system can move on to something else.
And look, as a prosecutor, I was involved in accepting plea deals.
Yes.
And I do not have an issue with a plea deal in principle.
Yes.
But we were told as prosecutors that it would only be appropriate to accept a plea if it still adequately reflected the criminality of the accused.
Yes.
So we're not letting them...
Letting them off effectively. That's so you can't offer to plead to, you know, an assault when you're...
A grievous bodily harm.
Yeah, or a grievous bodily harm. You've got to... The prosecutor's only accepted if it's in the ballpark, as it were.
And so that, I think, is where I struggle here, because there's been so much being discussed and done to demonstrate that this kind of offending is actually murder.
Mm. Well, when you say it's actually murder, I mean, technically it is potentially now under the reckless indifference.
Well, that's what the aim of the reform was.
Yeah, to pick up this kind of
case. That's right. Yeah. And so then to have someone who has committed an offence that could have been tailor-made for a reckless indifference murder charge to plead guilty to manslaughter and get the same penalty that was imposed pre the inquiry, the recommendations, the reform, well, why did we bother?
I mean, I don't know the answer to that, but I mean, the punishment obviously is handed out by the court. The court decides that based on the submissions of the prosecutors. Presumably the prosecutors...
Well, they're still tied by precedent. You know, they're still tied by past cases.
Yes.
So because it's the same charge, manslaughter, it's not a new charge, then they still have this bank of cases that have been deemed... by the community.
Well, sorry, by the courts, I think.
No, deemed by the community to be unsatisfactory.
Oh, yeah, sorry, yeah.
But the courts are bound by the law of precedent to apply them.
Yes.
So I wanted to tell you what Parliament said when they introduced the new charge, like the reason for this new charge. Many unlawful child killings in Queensland result in an offender being convicted of manslaughter rather than murder, for a range of reasons, including difficulty in establishing intent, even when the death is due to physical abuse. Including recklessness as an element of murder will capture a wider range of offending as murder in Queensland. Reckless murder exists in a number of other Australian jurisdictions, reflecting that intention and foresight of probable consequences are morally equivalent. That is, a person who foresees the possibility of death is just as blameworthy as the person who intends to kill.
Mm.
And she was convicted of manslaughter.
The practicalities of the criminal justice system win out.
Yeah. I should say there was criticism of this new provision. I wasn't sure if you would agree or not. And one criticism I read was by Chris Neist, who is a defence lawyer,
famous defence lawyer,
also an author.
And scriptwriter, movie writer.
Yes. Yeah. And he wrote an article in the Courier Mail and it said, 120 years after the Queensland Criminal Code proclaimed those who set out to kill intentionally, not recklessly or indifferently, must face mandatory life imprisonment, the Palaszczuk government, overriding protestations from the Law Society, the Women's Legal Service and the Queensland Bar Association, extended the definition of murder to include the concept of reckless indifference.
Mm.
The new definition will no doubt see some criminally bad parents locked up for life and probably the odd drunken teenage hoon who recklessly rolls his car and kills somebody in the process, or the soccer mum too preoccupied with the car radio and texting her friends to notice she's about to run right over the toddler from next door.
Yeah.
And that's his criticism.
Yeah.
I think that's fair.
I do too. I think he points out some, I mean, we're talking about in very specific cases in terms of neglect of children. But I mean, the other examples he gave, I think, you know, I mean, the idea of, you know, teenage drivers crashing and killing one of their friends, you know, that is something which sounds like it'd be captured by this reckless indifference murder now.
Yeah, and absolutely.
I mean, I think, we've said this before, and I don't want to bore people who aren't Queensland lawyers, but I think the problem really is our mandatory life for murder here.
Yes.
If we didn't have that, it wouldn't be really an issue, I don't think.
And look, I agree with you on that one.
You've got an international case. We're going to talk
about
that?
I do. Yes. So because I wanted to look at, or I ended up looking at common factors in child homicide.
Yep.
And so one of them, obviously, is a history of child abuse.
Yep.
A Victorian study identified that there was often abuse preceding a child homicide.
Yes.
But, you know, not always.
No.
It was not necessarily a precursor. Previous family violence, maybe not against the child, but a violent home is often a factor. So, I mean, that's evidence of that cycle of abuse, isn't it? Where intergenerational, you know, you treat others how you've been treated. But another common factor is this idea of having a child protection history. So interactions with child services of some kind.
And what, them not detecting the imminent danger to these children.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So Australian researchers noted many fatal abuse cases involve a history of abusive behaviour towards the child and have therefore come to the attention of the child protection system before the death. And that was absolutely the case for Mason Jetley.
Yeah.
His family had been the subject of numerous reports and investigations by various support and protection agencies. It wasn't just one. Mm. There was a number of them.
Mm.
There was actually so much evidence of the interactions that those agencies had had with Amber Lee and clear knowledge of the circumstances that she and her children faced in terms of abuse, addiction, homelessness.
Mm.
Yet there was not any follow-up or even concern for Mason.
Yep.
Anyway, it brings to mind another horrendous case, this one from the US, that involved the murder of an 8-year-old boy, Gabriel Fernandez.
So was it murder? It was charged with murder?
Let's listen. Let's
spoiler
listen.
Alert. All right.
So there was a Netflix documentary on this, if people want to go and watch it.
Yep.
His mother and her boyfriend were charged. So these two, the day or leading up to his death, he was tortured with a BB gun, pepper spray, coat hangers, and a baseball bat. He had suffered multiple skull fractures, multiple broken ribs. His throat was burned, and he had ligature marks on his ankles.
Yeah.
He didn't die until 2 days after that torture. When his death was investigated, it turned out he had suffered abuse at the hands of those two for pretty much the whole time he'd lived with them, which thankfully was only, you know, somewhere between 1 and 2 years.
Yeah.
Some reports state that his mother had never wanted him. She left him at the hospital when he was born, and he was raised by two different extended family members. Really beautiful upbringing to that point. But then apparently his mother wanted to get the welfare benefits attendant on having him in her care, and so she took him back against everyone's protests. And that was when he was 7. Almost immediately, a teacher at his first grade class noticed signs of abuse, and she rang family services, child protection, in late 2012. She called the child abuse hotline. So a caseworker went out to check that the family situation. She noted the children at the residence, there were two older siblings as well, were appropriately dressed, visibly healthy, and did not have any marks or bruises. That was her assessment. They were called multiple times after that to report injuries to Gabriel. He had told his teacher some things that had happened to him, but on the couple of occasions when that was followed up, he would not always stay true to those stories. He would sometimes recant them. They said they didn't see any evidence of bruising when they went to see him. So in May 2013, he died. So they'd been involved in investigations into his care for about 6 months. He was often bound and gagged, and he was locked in a cabinet called the cubby. So the Netflix documentary made a little bit of the time he spent in the box. He would spend days in there. He was forced to eat cat feces. He'd been hit so hard he couldn't breathe. He'd been made to perform oral sex on a relative. And at the age of 8, he had written numerous notes saying that he wanted to kill himself. So it was horrendous.
Yeah.
His mother and the stepfather were charged with murder.
Yes.
Thank God.
Okay. What state was this in?
California.
Okay.
The thing of note, which is a bit of a side issue from what I'm talking about today, but 4 caseworkers were charged in relation to his death.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay. So the caseworkers who went to the house didn't notice anything.
So they were charged with child abuse and falsifying public records.
Wow.
On the reasoning that they had demonstrated an improper regard for human life and a lack of vigilance. The facts that were considered included an analysis that a caseworker did using a computer program that estimated Gabriel's likelihood of abuse was high.
Yes.
But then closed off the case and did nothing further.
Wow. So what was the falsifying records, did you?
That was about the falsifying records. Due diligence had not been done by any of the caseworkers in terms of follow-up and documents had been falsified to cover that up.
Wow.
So they were all charged
and
it was, moving along. And then in March 2020, all of the charges ended up being dismissed.
Against everyone?
Against all of them.
Oh, my Lord.
And the reasoning for that was partly because there was this argument that they couldn't be deemed to be in control of the mother and the stepfather and their actions.
Oh, so the charge against the caseworkers was dropped?
Yep. They got convicted. Okay. Yeah. And then the other reason was that there was different people responsible for different parts of the neglect and putting it all onto.
Right. Okay. So. I see. So the mother and the stepfather, what happens to them?
Yeah, they were convicted.
Of murder?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and the intention was this reckless indifference.
I know, I just started talking about that because of the commonality of.
Oh, so it was absolute straight up intent.
Child reporting. Well, I don't know what it is in California. I don't know what the law is. But my focus here was that there is this common element of child protection.
Yes.
And I saw a similarity in lack of follow-up.
Yes.
And look, I 100% know that our family services, community services are vastly underfunded and understaffed. And I think it would be the most difficult job.
Yes.
And the people who do it are amazing for the job that they do. I think that there are issues.
Yeah.
With, not talking amongst agencies, not having enough staff and money.
Yeah.
That's a different issue.
Yeah.
But I feel like maybe Mason could have been saved.
Yeah.
Just like Gabriel could have been saved.
Well, I think it's interesting this because I don't know a lot about it, but I do know they have like this program in California where they, they put in the factors or whatever and it gives you a statistical likelihood of
risk.
Because I think, again, I'm no expert, but I think there's so much commonality in these cases that you can actually plot it on a chart.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
That in some sense would, I don't know what they do here, if they invest in that kind of stuff. But I do know that there's, predicting likelihood of harm is difficult in a lot of cases, but I think a bit easier in these child neglect cases.
Yeah, I think so. I see that there are things that can be anticipated when it comes to child homicide in terms of how can we try and reduce it.
Mm.
But I keep coming back to the fact that it will happen.
Yes.
And I want to see child homicide being charged as murder.
Yes.
I'll just really quickly finish off with.
Well, we seem to be moving in that direction.
Yeah,
does move slowly, but it is moving.
Well, I thought Connolly was going to be it.
Okay.
But then there was one other one. A fellow called Fisher, his surname was Fisher.
Hmm.
This was 2020. He was charged with murder on the basis of reckless indifference.
Yep.
This was in relation to a little 11-month-old baby girl.
Hmm.
And it was not his baby. It was his girlfriend's baby. Mm. And she had left that baby with him just for a short time while she went out, but the baby wouldn't settle, was screaming, yeah. and he picked her up and he squeezed her and then he shook her.
Yeah.
And it caused a fatal combination of head, spinal cord and other injuries. Mm. She died 4 days later.
Oh.
So, again, he's charged with murder on the basis of reckless indifference.
Yes.
Do you want to guess what happened?
Plea deal, and he pleads out to a
manslaughter.
Manslaughter. Yep. And what does he get?
And he got 9 years imprisonment.
Okay.
Eligible for parole after serving half of that. He'd spent about 2.5 years on remand, so he had another 2 years to serve. If you look at his case at all, it is a little different to Conley's.
Mm.
He was 18.
Yeah.
Very, very young. He had had a pretty tough upbringing himself. Yep. But interestingly, I was speaking to my 18-year-old son and his best mate, who's 19, and I gave them the facts of this case of Fisher. And I said, so do you think that's a murder, or do you think that's less serious? It should just be manslaughter. And, you know, if anyone knows my 18-year-old, he's not the type to really get into legal discussions with me, but for about 10 minutes, they both sat there and talked about it and said, well, this is a really hard one. Like, it sounds like a murder charge, but then, you know, he didn't shoot the baby. Mm. And I get that it's hard, but I think if we have a recognition and if we play out what the legislative reform is and start treating these as murder and people start getting life in prison, maybe it will have a deterrent effect. Maybe.
Yeah. Maybe.
That's my hope.
Yeah. Well,
they're our most vulnerable little victims, aren't they?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, certainly one way to prevent crime is through punishments that deter crime. But perhaps a better way would be, I don't know, some kind of educating people about dealing with children.
I do think someone like Fisher at age 18 with an 11-month-old, no experience, is a different kettle of fish to someone like Connolly.
Yes.
27 at the time.
Yep.
Knowledge of the risks.
And over a period of time, period of months, I mean, that's...
Yeah. So, I mean, yes, I think
the
Fisher case does not make me as upset,
no.
I suppose, as Connolly and Lee.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So there, really uplifting episode for you, Joe. That was a
very difficult episode. You've done fantastic research, so, Lizzie, you...
Well, when you're interested in something, it's not work, is it?
Yeah, well, and there are no disagreements for the whole episode.
That is miraculous.
I know. I think we have had another episode like that, but...
They're rare.
That's right.
Let's see what we can get up to next time.
Lovely. All right. Thanks, Lizzie.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks for tuning into this episode. You can find links to the cases that we discussed in the description. You can also find a link to Guardian Criminal Law, and a big shout out to them for making this podcast possible.
The majority of criminal cases involve people, normal people, people like you, people like me, who find themselves in an unusual set of circumstances that would not usually occur in their life. My name's Mark Savick, and I'm here to assist you with your criminal matter. I look forward to hearing from you and being of assistance to you.
If you're interested in clips, you can look at them on Instagram and TikTok. Just search for Justice Matters Pod. See you next episode.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.